Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 199 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Tonight, we have an amazing guest, video producer, editor-in-chief of 5x5 News. He's also the producer of a great video out there, Vegas Wrong, the documentary, of course, by our good friend Ramsey Dennison, who we have had on before. This is Mike Turber. How are you today, Mike?
I am doing excellent. So this is episode 199?
199. Yeah.
So we can party like it's 199?
Yeah, we can party like it's 199.
Awesome.
I love it. I ran across you. I mean, of course, we're friends with our guest, mutual friends of Ramsey, as well as friends with our good friend, Shannon Ray Caffey, who was one of the people that was injured at the Mandalay Bay shooting and it narrowly escaped stuff. His tale from him and his wife is absolutely harrowing just to hear about it. And as someone who works,
if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who works in the field of investigation, in the field of news, you have broke so much stuff about the Mandalay Bay shooting. It's more than a handful of things, from your videos exposing the security issues, not only at Mandalay Bay, but adjoining properties and sister properties. The apparent rolling over of the body of Stephen Paddock that was apparently you've been vindicated in. You've said it for the longest time that it happened. And they're like, nope. And then they just released a report saying that it happened. I guess let's start at the beginning. How did you come to be involved with the effort post Mandalay Bay massacre? Were you at Mandalay Bay the day things happened?
No, I wasn't there. I was actually at a casino. I was at the Torneros Casino in Arizona or New Mexico or Nevada. I don't even know where it's at. But as I was at the Torneros Casino, and I was on my way back from a trade show. We had driven out to Columbus, Ohio, and I was driving all the way back to California with a 26-foot trailer and then the truck and all, and we stopped off at that location. Myself and a friend of mine who's actually Chinese and hardly speaks any English. So that evening, my phone went off and it has a different tone when a certain call comes in, and someone told me to get on the radio right away and start listening in. And then they just hung up. And so I got on and I started listening in to the radio for, you know, for Las Vegas. And was just floored at the stuff I was listening to. I mean, anyone that's listening to just the police recording is amazed. It wasn't on the TV yet, so I was doing that. And of course, my friend was wondering what was going on, and I couldn't explain it to him because my Chinese is not very good and his English wasn't very good. So I was trying to explain it, and it finally came on TV and he understood. But the radio kind of startled it. But that got that part started as far as, you know, being a part of it right when it started. I don't normally do that, but that happened there. And then the next morning, I received a phone call from a long-time friend and someone that I actually used to work for. And back when I first took the job with him, he asked me why I was working there, and I told him that, you know, I want to make a difference. And then so when he called me that next morning, he says, "Hey, Mike, what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, told him I was at 20 Arrows, and I was thinking about heading up to Vegas." And he goes, "Hey, you might want to do that. Why don't you go make a difference?" And when he said that to me, I kind of read between the lines that he wanted me to get up there. In his mind, something was a little bit of a miss. And so that was it. And the rest is history. Just got home, regathered, my gear and stuff, and turned back around and just basically went up to Vegas. And that's when I met Shannon, actually. Shannon is the former guest of yours. And that's excellent. Meeting Shannon is what got really the whole ball rolling.
Oh, wow.
We were there. It was me, Shannon, and Laura Loomer, actually. So
okay.
me and Laura Loomer were walking the grounds because they just removed the police tape for the first time. This is like almost three weeks after the event. And at that time, I was the first person actually to cross into the area that had been blocked off. And I was kind of amazed that they were doing this. So I called Laura and said, "Hey, Laura, get down here. You know, they just took the tape down. Let's take a walk around and see what's going on." So she came down and we started walking around and looking at things. And then this couple was walking around as well. So, you know, I look at Laura, she looks at me and says, "Well, let's go talk to them and, you know, see if they were here." And sure enough, it was Shannon and Andrea.
Yeah.
They were there walking the grounds, and I talked to Shannon, and just the nicest guy, you'd ever meet. I mean, out of the top five people I've ever met in my life, he's like in the top two. He's really that great of a guy. And, so we talked to him for like 30 minutes or so. And then I think, Andrea brought up had Laura and I seen the memorial for Melissa and Melissa Ramirez, and we hadn't seen it yet because we hadn't made that far. And so we walked over to that area, and when we did, Andrea pointed at the roll-up door from a business that was there, and she asked me if I thought that was a mark from a bullet. And I said, "I don't know. Let me take a look." So I looked at it, and it kind of looked like one, but then again, it could have been anything. But it was aiming up from the ground a little bit, so didn't really think much of it at that time, but I figured I'd come back later and take a look at it, a little closer look. And that's essentially what got me started there. And then what really sparked the whole, shebang about me staying on and keeping up with what was going on there. When I looked up from the bullet mark that was on that roll up door, there was a camera there. And that camera was aiming at the parking lot, which I found a little bit odd. Normally cameras aim at the door or something like that, but it was aimed a little bit far out. And it was aiming direct where Melissa had passed away, right at her memorial. And also in the background was the rear entrance to McCarran International Airport. And also was the entrance a little bit further away was the Janet Airlines on the other side of the tanks that were there. They had the two fuel tanks that were shot at. And, of course, you know, Janet Air being the secret airline that takes people over to Area 51.
I never realized that Janet was right on the other side of those.
Yeah, it's right on the other side. Well, from the angle that I was at, it would be directly behind the tanks. But, some people said that he was trying to shoot at Janet, but that angle would not have made any sense at all.
Yeah.
So, but that's a whole other conspiracy theory or whatever. But
that's interesting because he does have ties to Lockheed.
Yeah, he does. He was obviously the accountant. There. Ooh. So yeah, he did have ties. Yeah.
Ooh.
So that means he had a clearance. I mean, he had a clearance. Yeah, definitely had that.
Yeah.
And some people were talking about him not ever having been fingerprinted and. That's not possible. There's no way you're going to get any security clearance without being fingerprinted. Yeah. Yes, he definitely was. Probably multiple times. I've been fingerprinted multiple times himself, so I'm sure he did too. But that was that's pretty much the start of it. And then after that, the cliff notes of the whole thing was I had the next morning I came back and I met with the shop manager there. His name's Sean. And talked to him for a few minutes. And then while I was talking to him, I asked him, I said, "Hey, did you notice the mark on your roll-up door?" And he had never even noticed it. He never even knew it was there. So when we went over to it, I asked him if he had noticed it, you know, the paint looked relatively new on the door. You know, one was painted, was recent or whatever, so I could get a time frame to narrow down the bullet mark. And everything came out to where it was within the actual time frame. I think it was like several months previous that it was painted. But then I pointed at the camera and I said, "Did you take a look at your video footage and to see what had happened that night?" And he said that the owner had been watching it, I guess, live and seeing what's going on, but they didn't know how to go back and actually pull the video and download it or any of that stuff. And so I asked him if I could, you know, take a look at it to see if there was anything on there that might be, you know, useful for the victims or, you know, the attorneys or, you know, whoever needed the footage. And he said, "Sure." He found out, you know, talked to the owner and he got back with me. And then I was able to remote access the system. Yeah, I had the whole system, the whole thing. So I have not just that footage. I have footage from like the whole month. You know, so just to see if there's anyone, prior that came up there that did anything, or just if I would have caught any type of activity at all. But most of the activity on the non-event days was pretty normal. Then the days afterwards, of course, it became rather bizarre when, where Melissa passed away and where the memorial is. Within 2 days later, Fox News was actually there doing their makeup and everything on that same spot without, it had never been cordoned off as a crime scene or anything like that, which I found rather bizarre.
That
I've never
strange.
Seen a situation. Yeah, that to me is a problem. If you have a person where they pass away, and I think this was even mentioned when the video was on Fox News, they mentioned that they had never seen anything like that either. That's a crime scene where a person expires is
yeah.
You have to pictures, you have to do everything just like you would anything else.
Yep.
And they didn't do any of that ever.
Especially if it's in a public place, not in a private residence or hospital, something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, under a controlled environment like a hospital or something like that, yeah, someone expires even after they've been shot or something like that. It's not a crime scene.
Yeah.
But when somebody expires in public, you have to take into a possible consideration that something else could have happened, and who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what? Somebody sees them as crimes of opportunity. There's been situations where person gets shot, a whole bunch of things happen, or a fire or something like that, and then some criminal somewhere says, "Wow, this is a great time to shoot my wife," or whatever the deal is. And it's not rare, but it can happen. So they should have done it to rule any of that out, but they didn't.
Well, there has been a long history of course corruption in the local police department there, in the sheriff's department. And I found it very interesting talking with Ramsey about some of the security measures that are taken on the private levels of hotels there in Vegas, where there is a private line on the high roller floors that bypasses normal 911 and goes straight to the sheriff's department. And of course, what kind of confusion that caused when somebody calls up and says, "Hey, I've been shot," and they're trying to figure out where other gunfire is coming from. Had a phone call been going out to normal 911, they may have been able to find that out a little more rapidly than 20 minutes.
I agree. By bypassing the 911 system, the 911 operators, I don't think there's a system in place that when they call that special number that they have, that number feeds back to the 911, operators to let them know that the shooting is going on. That whoever answers that special number, you would think would be part of that queue in the 911 system that would push numbers on the board or show where activity is and what have you. So everyone would be aware of it.
Well,
I don't know.
Let's be clear, folks. If you're staying at a Vegas hotel, chances are 98th percentile that you are not one of the people on the floor that we are talking about. These are the floors reserved for people that spend millions of dollars a year at a hotel, on a property, at sister properties, gaming, doing all kinds of stuff. These are the people that get full rooms for free for a week, all that kind of stuff, where it's like, hey, here's your master suite, the equivalent of 3-4 rooms put together with a balcony, that kind of stuff. And totally different realm of clientele. So if you're staying in Vegas and you call 911, if you call for help, more than likely you are reaching 911. It's just these high roller floors that specifically have the difference there.
And I think in this case what happened was the actual security, the way it works is the 911 system, the way they bypass is because the actual Mandalay Bay security is able to bypass 911 and call directly to whatever their special task force is that answers those calls. And I would assume that they would only do that on situations maybe like this, or if you have a robbery in progress, you know, because casinos get robbed actually more often than we know. And, you know, situations along that. And obviously this was one of those. And I believe that call was made, but we never really hear anything about it. So yeah, bypass the system. But I think the system's more or less for the security to call over there, not necessarily, you know, like obviously Stephen Paddock wouldn't have called over there to say, hey, here's what I'm doing. Let them know. But the same thing with the other callers. I don't know if those room, I don't think the room calls, the rooms calling out like the Vista Suites, which is what he had. I don't think those automatically bypass the 911 system. I think they probably go into the same system, but the hotel security definitely would bypass their system.
Yeah. And you know, it was interesting. Go through some of the other security bypasses, other security issues that you ran across with Laura Loomer in the awesome video that y'all put out.
Sure, no problem. What had happened was when I was there, I wanted to find the way he came to the room, because obviously there was a situation, or at the time, we didn't have video of Stephen Paddock going to the room or using service elevators. We had nothing. We literally had nothing. The attorneys were asking questions, and one of the questions was asked by the attorney, Craig Ireland in Texas, and he was on Fox, and he simply stated that, how did Stephen Paddock get to the room, bypassing essentially any security protocols that might be in place by using the service elevator. And his question was really clear, and he didn't ask me specifically. He basically just put that out there. He asked, did he need a special card to go up there? Did someone have to go with him? Did the valet have to go with him, or the bellman, or the whoever?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the question. Where is the elevator? All these different things. So that was I looked at that and I was like, well, you know what? I'll find that out. So when I went to Mandalay Bay, I decided to just stay there. I got a room, and the girl put me on the 7th floor, and I said, well, can you put me on the 32nd floor? And she said, well, let me check. And sure enough, she came back. She said, sure. I was like, great. So she put me in 32219. Yeah, so I was on the 32nd floor. So I was on the same floor. Just obviously not in the 100 wing, because that was all blocked off. But I, when I was on the 32nd floor, I started looking for the service elevators. Where did they come out at? So I walked around the central core of elevators, didn't find it there. And sure enough, not four doors or so down from my room, there was these blank nondescript doors.
Yep.
They didn't say anything. I thought, well, that could be vending. It could be laundry. It could be something.
They're just, push doors.
Yeah, just the push doors. And they're open. There was no lock on them, nothing. Yep. So I opened it up and I look inside, and lo and behold, guess what I see? Six elevators.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a service elevator. So I went back to my room, regrouped, got my camera gear ready to go. I said, you know what? Let me go down and find out where it comes out at. And then I do. And then I'm like, okay, so I had no clue where I was, but I came out apparently in the employee area. And I just walked on out the door, went out to my truck and sat there for a minute and turned around and said, well, let me do this going backwards with my cell phone and just the cell phone. Don't walk around with cameras and have a bunch of stuff. And that's why the very first video is really it's a bouncy video, but I literally just walked through the casino, walked straight past where you would think security would be. The door literally opened for you. I mean, there's no security code you had to enter, nothing. The door opened up for me. I walked on in. And as you see in the video, I just walked straight through the elevator and go up to my room, and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was one. So I thought, well, maybe I got lucky one time, because a few people had tried before me and no one had been able to do that. So then I was like, okay, well, let's try it again. So I do it. And then by the 27th time, I had, you know, this is over a matter of days, I figured, well, Laura Loomer's in town, and she just really pissed off the sheriff, so go ahead. And of all the people that are in town right now that I would want to go up the elevator with me and make a scene or whatever we're going to do, that someone would maybe pay attention, why not bring Laura Loomer? So I call her and I say, hey, what are you doing? And she says, she's going to do something or whatever with some of the people she's with. And I said, well, why don't you come on down here? I got something cool to show you. And yeah, I got something really cool. So she comes down and I told her what we're going to do. And she's like, no way. I said, yes. So let's do it. So she's got her camera out and I've got mine out where, you know, we go up and down the elevator and shoot. And of course you can see in the video, she's amazed. She's like, we just did this. And even at one point, the maintenance people or one of the maids or whatever from across the hallway in another elevator had just gotten off and waved to us and said, hey,
how you doing? Yeah.
Right. Hey, cool. Well,
and
nothing.
That's just it. Like I make the joke all the time because I do corporate AV. We're normally all mm-hmm. in black and we're walking around with our backpack with our computer and, you know, mm-hmm. snacks, all that kind of stuff. It's like, how comfortable is security just to see a group of six people in black with backpacks walking around in back corridors?
Exactly.
Like they, it's so entirely easy. I tell people out there, just walk around like you belong.
Yep, that's the key. Just if you ever do anything like that, we call it, in the industry, we call it penetration testing. Mm-hmm. Basically, we pick a target. We either do it with permission of the owner or without permission of the owner. Without permission of the owner is so much more fun and so much more real. So obviously, I didn't have permission of Manly Lady to do it. Oh. So, but after 27 times, I figured, you know, somebody's got to be watching this and saying, hey, who is this guy?
There's cameras in the corridor and in the elevator, right?
Yeah, there's cameras in the corridor, in the employee entrance, and in the elevator. But after you get off the elevator onto whatever floor you're wanting to get off on, there's no cameras at that point.
Yeah.
So as soon as you walk off the elevator, you're no longer under any type of surveillance other than their Wi-Fi surveillance, which I'll tell you about in a minute.
Yeah,
it's kind of neat. But so it's called penetration testing. So that was what I was basically doing, was seeing just, you know, how far, how long I can do it before someone says anything. And finally I gave up. It was just too many times. So when Laura and I did it, we gave the footage to the local Fox station and they aired the footage. And it's on Fox 5, for Las Vegas, which is still on their channel. And when we did, you know, next thing you know, Mandalay Bay finally responds. Now, here's the tricky thing about Mandalay Bay. Back on November 17th, day of 2017, they put up a memo essentially stating, or a release, stating that they were increasing their security and they were doing a couple of changes. And one of the changes that they were doing was adding 24-hour security to the hotel's elevator banks. So they did that. So that area where the regular guests go up to the rooms has a police officer on, or not police officer, but Mandalay Bay security on each of those elevator banks. So there's three officers or three Mandalay Bay security guys on each or in that area, they call it the core, and covering people going into the rooms. And basically just ask to see your key and then you go on to your room. So, but the area where the service elevators are, there was still nothing, zero. Not a person there, nothing at all. And you would think that, okay, if Stephen Paddock was known to have taken the service elevator to bring all of his weapons up to the room, wouldn't that be the area that he would probably have some sort of security? Yeah. So apparently not the case there. And of course, the reporter, his name's John, he's the anchor at Fox 5, was kind of amazed. And, but after they aired the broadcast, they came back and they gave a statement, the only statement that actually Mandalay Bay had done up to that point to address any security concern at all was me and Laura doing the elevator thing. And they basically stated that they would look at the video and they would take it under review and make any steps necessary to facilitate a change. So I'm like, okay, great. So a few weeks go by and I decide, you know what? Let's see if they've done anything. And I go back, and they did. They had two new keypads up on the door. The door did not automatically open, so you actually had to enter something onto the pad to go in.
Okay.
So I decided I'm not going to manipulate a lock. I'm not going to manipulate a person. If I get in, anytime I do penetration testing, I'm always going to do it just go, just walk, just do whatever.
Yeah.
And so the valet comes by, and he walks through, and the door opens up, and sure enough, I just walk in behind him. And go, and me and a friend of mine that was with me at the time, and this is on video as well. And we go right at the elevator and do the same thing all over again. He busted out laughing when we got in the elevator. He says, that security is a joke. So your biggest security advantage in a business, or your best asset for security, is your employees. it's that set of eyes, that human set of eyes that's looking around, making certain that the area is secure. And if they see something out of whack, they're supposed to, you know, report it or what have you. But obviously, if a valet walk or a bellman walks through a door and you walk in behind him, two guys, he should turn around and go, hey, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah. Do you guys have an employee badge? You know, anything like that?
Nothing at all. And sure enough, of course, you know, they put the security system in place, which, you know, cost them a one-time charge, but to actually hire someone to come in to train their employees on what to look for, no, they didn't do that.
Yeah. And there are some hotels, like I work hotels in Vegas. I've never had the opportunity to work Mandalay or adjoining property. But I know hotels in Vegas where, like, in the freight elevators, stuff like that, they have a security person posted, you know, all that kind of stuff. Elevators where, like, it's just going down to the dock and going up, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's nice to see that. It's good to see that kind of stuff that existed there before Mandalay. And
now the other casino, which, you know, one of the things that happened at the time, once it was known that Paddock had taken the service elevator, and that became pretty clear knowledge, the Wynn Casino, of course, Steve Wynn, is on Fox, the Sunday morning broadcast. And so he's on there, and he is being queried about all of the changes that Wynn has gone through with their security before the shooting. And Wynn had expected and invested, I think, something to the tune of over $10 million on different security things. And they put in place, they hired people from SEAL Team, and I mean, all of this kind of stuff, SEAL Team 6 and SEAL Team 1, and they had people doing all of their security stuff, and they put put magnetometers in there so they could actually tell if someone's carrying or what have you. And they did it in such a way that was not obtrusive. If you walk through the door, you can wire a door to be its own metal detector, and that's what they did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they did all that, and so they had all that done. And so he was really proud of his accomplishment of not having a situation ever occur. And he basically stated that no one has ever gotten into a service elevator at a Wynn facility without security. I was like,
Well,
that sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah, that sounded very open-ended.
Yeah, definitely did. So next thing you know, I'm like, well, here I go. Let's go to the Wynn. So I go over there and do the same thing to the Wynn. And, you know, I had no clue where the service elevators were. So I just basically randomly guessed where I needed to go. And I ended up getting lost. I went downstairs to some club that wasn't open yet. And there was a door on the wall that looked kind of out of place. So I just walk over to this door and pull it. It's wide open. And then next thing you know, boom, I'm in the back end of Wynn Casino.
Yep.
And I just start walking all over the place. And they have three service elevators. So I went up all three of them. And one of their service elevators actually goes to the restaurant, which you'll see in the video. It's a straight shot of me walking through the whole thing. And they were not happy about it at all. But one of the elevators gets off in the kitchen. And I walked in there and I saw, oh, my God, I'm in the back of the kitchen. And I have no clue what I'm doing here. And they're all looking at me and thinking, what the hell am I supposed to do now? So I just start looking around for random stuff. I'm going to say something and the manager starts walking over towards me. And I said, hey, did you guys get the cups? And he goes, cups? I said, yeah, the bowl cups. And he goes, bowl cups? I was like, yeah, for the French onion soup. And just the stupid stuff. I was stuttering. I sounded like an idiot. And I was like, this guy's surely got to get me. And he pointed over to a stack of the onion soup bowls, which I had already looked at. That was my clue to say that. And I looked, oh, okay, I see you already have them. And next thing you know, I get back on the elevator and I'm leaving as quickly as I can get out of it as possible.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then that was quite funny. I got in the elevator. I couldn't believe it. I was like, God, I said, I must have sounded like a complete moron when I said that.
Well, and you know, it just goes to show that number one, the committed individual will get in. It will happen. It's not inordinately hard to breach security like physical security to get in places,
right.
To get past people, to give a believable story, to let you get past. Even if you were right. Like, oh yeah, I'm just here delivering something, trying to find John, need to find the dock master, need to get in.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It's not extraordinarily difficult, but
no, it's not. And one of the key things about doing that type of situation is a lot of people wonder, okay, what's the big deal? So what? You went up the service elevator. Come on. You know, who cares? That kind of thing. Well, here's the answer to that. If it was not a concern, then why did they put the security on a certain set of elevators but not the other ones? Don't you think any facility?
Yeah.
But I was able to gain access to not only the employee entrance and the employee offices, but I also with another person one day, because I was giving tours at that one point, saying, hey, who wants to go? Okay, here you go, let's go. And so someone came over from Caesar's Palace, and she worked at Caesar's Palace. She didn't really want anybody to know who she was. And I was like, okay, so let's go. And so when we were coming down the elevator, I hit the wrong button and I hit a different floor, and I came out in their actual offices, and they have the hallways are named like street names, like Wall Street, which is apparently the financial side. And I looked down one hallway, I could see like the security room, and I said, "Wow, okay, we're definitely definitely don't want to hang out here too long.
Definitely not where we need to be."
Exactly. So it is important that if you're gonna put security somewhere, that you have it pretty much consistent throughout your entire facility. Otherwise. Sure. You know, people are going to come in with holes. I found holes right away.
Well, and you know, even before it came out that he was going up and down the coming in and out through the back elevators, mm-hmm. when people were like, "Oh my God, how could some whack job get that many guns up to their room?" I was like, "Hey, you've apparently never been to Vegas." have you ever seen SHOT Show or heard of SHOT Show? Like it's the biggest firearms convention in the world that you can just walk in and buy a ticket to. That's not like national arms dealers, you know?
Exactly. And I used to be an arms dealer. I was a federally licensed firearms dealer, and I had a business called World of Weapons, and I've done the SHOT Show. And so at the SHOT Show, I would not leave my prized, you know, weapons on that floor.
No,
so
you would take them in a case mm-hmm. through the casino. Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, security guard, here's my room key, and you show it to mm-hmm. them, and you tap it on the thing, and it turns green, and you walk right through. They don't give a damn what's in your bag.
Exactly. And another thing about showing them the key, here's a funny one. I decided to see just how well that security bank is over with where the core elevators are. Mm. So I made my own Mandalay Bay room key. I had a poor picture of Mandalay Bay with some palm trees and some other stuff, and I took their logo, and I went into Photoshop, and I made a key, like a business card size thing. I laminated it, and I went in, and I used that one. It didn't look hardly anything like the regular Mandalay Bay key, so I figured, well, I wonder if they would even notice it. So I flashed it to the guy, and he looked at it and just, yeah, no problem. I went on by. It looked nothing like any of their keys.
Yeah. No, I mean, otherwise, how would the escort get up to your room?
exactly.
We just need to know you have a key somewhere here in town. Some of them do
good.
Now, like the Palazzo and stuff mm-hmm. like that now mm-hmm. have a tap system where it actually has to validate the card as you walk mm-hmm. by. Yep. You actually have to tap it on there and it'll turn green or red if it's a valid card. Like it's not like it used to be, like, you know, where you could get like an expired card and just carry it with you and go park for free and that kind of stuff.
Yep. And I actually still have, like, I actually have the keys that I was using with me right now. Yes, sir. I still keep them in my wallet. But one of the things they did do that they have changed, when you get on the elevator now, I think a certain floor access, or maybe all the floors, do require that you tap the key. To utilize the elevator, but here's the way I bypass that. I bypass that too with another director or an editor from a different documentary that's being done, and she was with me. Her name's Amy, and we literally walked in there. My key didn't work, and I looked at her and I said, "Well, let's just stand in here until someone else comes in." So we're standing in the elevator; it's not going anywhere, and waited probably 2 minutes, and then someone came in, and I'm pretending like I'm fumbling with my key, and then no problem. We go up to the foundation room, and that's actually when when I got kicked out of the foundation.
Yeah. Oh, 16, please. You know, that's that's how you got to do. It's called social engineering, and most people are obliging to do it. Most people don't want to cause a stir. They aren't going to, you know, it's the same thing as walking up somewhere and telling them, you know, you're there to check the internet connection. As long as you got a name on your shirt and you got a little tool in your hand, they probably ain't going to question you. There was somebody having a problem with the internet, so they called the cable guy. It's what he looks like in my house. You know,
and that's a classic thing there. I mean, that's one of the one you just mentioned is I always would go in somewhere cable or telephone, and I have, you know, I have my little yellow vest on, and sometimes I even put my hard hat on, and just walk in there like you own the place, and they're like, oh yeah, and they give you a tour. They will take you wherever you want to go.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. They'll tell you the person's name. Like what department they're in, which door to go into. They're gone right now, but if you just go in there, you know, doors open.
Exactly. And then when you come back and you report to the business owner, you say, okay, well, here's what your employees did. And you show them the video of you just, you know, saying whatever, and they take you on the whole tour of the facility. Of course, their jaw hits the floor because every security meeting they probably ever had has just been blown out of the window.
Yeah.
It's repetition. You have to train these people. You got to train them over and over again, and let them know what to look for. And you know, but the classic answer I always get, but he didn't look like a bad guy.
And that's what I was going to get into was the fact of who does technically look like a bad guy? You know what I mean?
Exactly. If I went in there with a bunch of like MS-13, you know, tattoos on me and this fully sleeved and bald head or whatever vision that person has of a bad guy. And I would probably still be able to get it.
I know people like that are teddy bears.
Exactly. A lot of my friends, I got tattoos on my leg with the switchblades on them going through a skull with a snake.
They just like ink, you know, they're teddy bears. Like I'll let them watch my kid.
they're awesome.
They're great.
They're probably
people.
The most calm people ever because no one messes with them. They're calm.
You know, number one, Mike, it's the fact that Stephen Paddock was no stranger to Mandalay Bay.
Right.
He was there with regularity. So it was very much not necessarily an old Vegas concept, but within the realms he was going to, within the tables he played at, things like that, it was definitely a point of recognition, you know. There would be a, hello, Mr. Paddock, how are you today? You know, because he was there enough. He spent enough money. He was at the high roller tables. You've only got certain people going up to like $500 limit tables, that kind of stuff.
He would get his haircut there. They would wash his clothes. Yeah. I mean, all of these different perks that you get, you know, for being, you know, having that type of money that you put through their system. I mean, just on the last day he was there, he put over, I think it was to the tune of $860,000 through the machine. So $860,000 goes to the machine. Of course, he didn't like put in $860,000. If you put in $10,000 and you keep playing it, then it just keeps ringing up. That's what it was. That last day was $33,000. Apparently, he pulled the ticket out for. So that's not bad for a day's work, right?
Yeah, I'll take $33,000 in a day.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. I might cover a couple bills.
What's strange to me is the way that things went down afterward, the way that information became rapidly reined in, timelines continually changed from the sheriff's department. It changed all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it did. It did. And that leads to a lot of questions. I mean, if people follow different events like this, generally your time frames are going to be fairly accurate from the beginning, but they're going to be off here and there for stuff that they don't have. And normally what they'll say is that, you know, we don't really have that information yet in that area of the time frame of the narrative. It is semi-blank. You know, you don't really interject anything there. You just leave it alone.
Sure.
And that's where they really screwed up with Campos. I mean, Campos is all over the map as to whether he was there before he started shooting, after he started shooting, you know, when was he there, when was Chuck there, was the cart there? I mean, all these different things. And then, you know, of course, when did Paddock even check in? Of course, Laura Loomer came out with the information that she acquired that showed that he was actually checked in on the 25th, not the 28th. And that's 3 days. And we've only to find out that the sheriff knew this all along. He didn't want to tell anybody. So he gets to pick and choose what information goes out. And the question I have, which I did actually get to talk to Lombardo, the question that I would have had then for that is, if your primary or only suspect is expired, the 405, which means he committed suicide, and he's done, and there's no other shooters, according to him, within a couple hours after the shooting stopped, there's no other shooters, nothing to be alarmed, blah, 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 you know, that saying move along kind of thing, then why hold any information?
Yeah,
there's no reason to. If it's cut and dry and it's all done, and we know, you know, that if you're positive that's the shooter and you're making everybody feel comfortable, but yeah, why are you withholding information?
Clean is clean.
Exactly. And that's where you alluded to earlier, was there's something different about Vegas.
There's something amiss. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go full conspiracy theorist and say that, you know, that like the Saudi prince was there, all that kind of stuff, right. Which he was. So what? you know, he's probably there every other weekend, dude.
Yeah, I mean, hell, they own the top floors of the hotel. I mean,
most of the hotels there. Like, not just that one, most of them. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and we're not going to, you know, going to really know if he's there or not unless you're up, you know, playing with him or whatever. But yeah, you know, that's their own little secret hideaway. I mean, they own it, so might as well go show up there. And plus, they own stuff in Macau and everywhere else that they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you're gonna go hit the tables somewhere, you may as well hit it where it comes back home.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yeah, but the thing is it leads us to wonder. Okay, if there's all of these questions, and the reporters are sitting there and they're giving these press conferences, and where they're asking questions, and they're getting either A, the wrong answer, or B, no answer. I didn't go to the press conference. I pulled myself out of it because I wanted to be more active in other types of areas and feed information to other people and let them do all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of laid in the background, and my question is real simple. It's like, what is the problem? I've been to several other press conferences from several other events similar to this, and I've never experienced this before.
Yeah.
I've never experienced them holding this information. The FBI comes in and they swoop in like they're going to take over. And then all of a sudden we find out the LVMPD is still in the lead as far as the case is concerned. And the FBI is going to run as a support role as far as the evidence and gathering and stuff like that, and ship everything to Quantico and do all the testing.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. That's wonderful. So, still, why aren't you telling us anything? You know, we're not waiting for a full report, but you're holding information, and the only answer that makes sense, the only answer is that A, or a couple answers probably, A, they screwed up and they're, you know, they want to make certain that they cover that up, or B, which makes more sense, they are actually covering up for the casinos because there might be some liability factor involved here, and they're going to control the information that goes out. So the lawyers for MGM, they were pretty much controlling the narrative at that point and
yep.
what information was being flowed out. So like, yeah, it makes sense, but still at the same time, it's not right. But
yeah,
I understand it if they would have just said that.
Sure, sure. I mean, we've got some optics here. That's all you got to say. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep.
Everybody understands what the hell optics are nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got some optics to look at here, folks. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
But for crying out loud, like we droned a dude in Dallas that opened fire on a bunch of police officers, and we blew him up via robot grenade. We found out everything about that. Everything.
Yeah.
Like immediately.
And it is. I mean, we give information faster, and I think it's been brought before from a robbery suspect from a 7-Eleven. We've got his text messages. We've got all kinds of stuff on this guy. He just robbed a 7-Eleven within 15 minutes. His pictures on the screen, probably we know everything about it.
We got the stingray data from his cell phone.
Yeah. You know? We've got the video of him doing the crime. Yeah. Blow up the whole nine yards. You know, and even though the guy may have been shot dead or whatever, we have all the information that's right there. What's the problem? The problem, the scope of the situation with the number of victims involved. And you've got security from Mandalay Bay, you got security from CSC over across at the venue, and then you've got all these other different things that are going in play. It just became super complicated, and they just wanted to clamp down on everything and control the information for one reason, and one reason only, which is to limit the liability to the shareholders of that organization.
Yeah.
Period. That's it.
Well, and we had very much, and from episode one, the first time we covered mm-hmm. this, I had Shannon in my hotel room. And we were going live and we were talking about it. And I was like, you know, make no mistake, the motto of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas mm-hmm. is exactly what this is about. It's the fact of we need people to understand that it is safe to come to the Vegas Strip. We need them to understand that it is business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is to shut that up.
Exactly. And we as American public, you know, I don't want to say this and it sound cliche, but we're used to this.
Sure.
We understand it.
Yeah.
You know, we know that we want to get right back in there and get back. You get the businesses back up and running because, you know, they're hurting. Everybody's hurting. Let's get right back in there and show these guys that they're not going to take control of our country. They're not going to, we're not going to feel like we're under.
Just like the attitude after 9/11, you know, get out, buy an airline ticket.
Yep.
Go buy an airline ticket. Show them that you're not afraid, because that's what they want, is for you to be afraid. See, that's how they win. And very, very much the same mentality. And what's really wild to me is that we experienced it here in Austin this last year. And we covered it on the show and we talked about it when the Austin bomber was going on. We heard about that locally. That did not hit national news till after South by Southwest was over.
Wow. Yeah.
Happening while hundreds of thousands of people are pouring into town for that one month a year to spend crazy money and to come see music and to come see what Austin is all about. But we aren't going to tell people that right now we have a bomber roaming around dropping packages off at people's homes and putting them on the hike and bike trail. We didn't let that be known to national news until after things were over.
And withholding information to some degree does make a little bit of a sense from a safety standpoint. But when it gets down to about the dollar, that's a big issue. That's a big pet peeve for me. And that's why I went full bore on looking at all the different things. And it started, you know, with the leaked images. I'm like, okay, I'm going to dig into this one. I am going to figure this one out.
Yeah, let's get into some of that real quick.
Well, you know, obviously the images were leaked, and we had, you know, back then, you know, at the time, no one knew who it was. And of course, Sheriff Lombardo gets up in front. And says that, yes, these are in fact images from the crime scene. And I'm looking at these images and I'm thinking, okay, how did the images get from Las Vegas to Boston to this one reporter in Boston? Let me look at this reporter for a second. Oh, this reporter used to be in Las Vegas. Huh. That's kind of interesting. So she used to be in Las Vegas, but somehow she gets these images in Boston. Then we're talking about Jackie Heinrich, of course. So I call her. I contact her and say, hey, how'd you get these images? Yeah, of course, she wasn't going to say anything. So I figured, you know what, I'll leave that alone and I'll figure it out. But what the hell, I'll give it a chance. So I go back and I'm starting to look at things. And Laura Loomer, again, she pops up and she's got this little scoop for some reason. I've never got the information. No one will know. But all of a sudden, she finds out that this guy, Levi Hancock, who was this SWAT guy, who was the only SWAT guy that was actually on the breach team, he's the one that had all the explosive detonation stuff for the door and blah, blah, blah. He may have had a previous relationship with this girl. Okay. Well, that's kind of odd. So maybe somehow, some way, he took these pictures and sent them to her for whatever reason. I don't know. Who knows? So that was a speculation at the time. Of course, everything was, no, that's not it, blah, 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 everything. Yeah, they're just sweeping it under the rug. So, of course, Laura and I, we keep going on with it, but at some point in time, you keep moving on because you can't get more information. So I just said, you know what, let me call Levi. So I called Levi. And, of course, he answers the phone, says, well, if you need any information, you got to call our PIO, public information officer.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, no, it's more of a personal nature here because it sounds like this is your ex-girlfriend or something. That's what people are saying. And then he just said the same thing again. And of course he was to get mad at that point, and that was it of that phone call. He wondered how in the hell I got his phone number. I said, well, I'm an investigator. That's what I do. That's what I do. So, yo, man, that's what I do.
Yeah.
There's a Vegas, so do that. So then a couple of few weeks go by and I give him another chance. And I text him this time. I just text him some messages and say, hey, this is about to break again. And you're going to be brought up. And, of course, he says basically the same thing. And then at that point, he's like, doesn't remember me, doesn't know who I am. I said, I just talked to you a few weeks ago. I'm the guy, blah, blah, blah. The only reporter he's ever talked to.
Yeah.
And so, okay, well, so he basically brushes me off. Everything fine. Then a few months go by, and then Sheriff Lombardo is doing a radio show. I'm like, he's doing a radio show, and he's accepting call-ins. So me and a whole bunch of group of the investigators were kind of like in this chat room, and I'm driving up to Sacramento area to do some motorcycle stuff, which is what my day job is. And so as I'm driving up there, we're all chatting and everybody's trying to get through. And one of the girls, she has her own show. She's trying to get through, and of course they're screening the calls. And I don't know what her question was, but whatever it was, they screened her off and didn't let her go on the show. So
sure.
I call and I'm like, okay, well, I'm apparently late to the game. But the guy takes my call and he asks me, so what am I going to ask about? I said, well, I'm going to ask about the leaked images from the shooting. And the whole show had been about like drunk driving, about some other stuff, some community stuff. And of course, here I am going to hoodwink Lombardo with the question of leaked images. But I wasn't going to lie to him either. I was going to say it was going to be some question about something else. And then boom.
Yeah.
And the guy let the call through. He can let the call through. I'm like, okay, great. So rest is history. Lombardo, they introduced me, and I tell him it's a two-part question. And first part is about the leaked images. And I asked him point blank. I said, well, now that the fit report's done, the whole thing's, the investigation's effectively over. You promised us that you would get to the bottom of the leaked images. What has come of that? And his first words are, to be honest with you, nothing. Almost verbatim, that's what he said. He says, to be honest with you, nothing.
I got no response for you.
Nothing. He does this comprehensive investigation and blah, 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 and we checked into everything, and we weren't able to determine who took the images. I'm like, okay. So part two of the question is
that. A lot of cameras floating around in that room other than body cameras that night, I guess.
Exactly. And of course, this was before the body worn camera, the footage came out, where they're actually bouncing the images back around to each other. So, from the outside, any number of people could have leaked those images round and round. So who knows? It just blows it up in the air. But then in the second part of the question, I asked him, I didn't let him know the both parts first. I went ahead and just said, asked the first part. And then of course I reminded him that second part. And I asked him about Levi Hancock specifically, and the rumor about his girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, we've heard about that, but I can definitely tell you that absolutely he is not the person who leaked the images. I'm thinking, okay, so in the first part of the question, you were able to tell me that you couldn't determine who leaked the images at all, but you were able to finally determine that Levi had not done it. How's that work? You're able to rule someone out when in the first part you couldn't determine anyone, and now you could rule this guy out. Okay. Yeah. And so, all right. And
you don't know who it is, but we know it's not this guy.
Exactly. He was like so animated. And I was like, yeah, well, we know it was Levi Hancock. And he spoke up, and I was like, oh, crap. I struck a nerve. So, anyway, that was it. And it was the last call of the show. They end the show, boom, done. I'm out the door. So, okay. And then comes along the body worn camera footage where the image is being bounced around between the cell phones, and I put that up there, and they show, where apparently the guy that was doing the editing on the videos allowed this section to be somewhat clear so we could see what was going on. But okay, this is odd. And then last, but you know, what happened most recently that actually, you know, just, you know, it is amazing. It is, you go back and forth and you start looking at these events and you try to piece all this stuff together. So you have the leaked image in the beginning to begin with, which actually shows obviously Paddock laying on the floor. And Eric was not very happy about that. That's actually the source of him saying, the words that he chose to call the LVMPD, is actually from that. And also from the fact that someone was able to break into the house, up in, Mesquite House or Reno, or the Reno House. And, you know, while it's under investigation. So long story short, we're looking at this image of somebody, and I look for patterns. I've always been trained to look for patterns, and I'm looking at this image of Paddock, and I look at the carpet, and I'm thinking, I see his face in the carpet. I actually see an imprint. And sure enough, I bring it into Photoshop, and I'm looking at it, and I change some of the contrast and lighting effects and stuff like this to get a better image of it. And as I do that, the blood changes colors. And I'm thinking, the blood shit really changed colors. And as I look at it, I realize there's two absolute distinct blood patterns here of two different colors. The only way that can happen is if the blood came out at two different times. I'm not talking about within a minute. Yeah,
no, enough time for it to coagulate, pool, change color, mm-hmm. change consistency, viscosity, all that kind
exactly.
of stuff.
Exactly. And so, you know, we have a lot of iron in our blood, and when it gets out, you know, the color change, just like you alluded to. And so that happened. But the drastic difference between that, for me, I was thinking, okay, I'm colorblind. So for me, it was difficult to tell. And, you know, for others, it'd be a lot easier. So I'm playing with the color things. I'm looking at it and go, wow, this is a long period of time between these. I'm thinking, at this point, I had fairly, assumed he shot himself fairly quickly after the shooting stopped, but I wasn't sure. This is way back right after the shooting. This is before I actually found the final suicide shot. So he was moved, and everyone looks at the weapon above him. So you got the pistol above his head, and then you got this rifle that's on him, and he's laying on another one. You know, when people commit suicide, that just doesn't really happen. You're not going to have all these weapons in these different locations. And of course, the time difference between the blood patterns. I had a friend of mine who they told me that probably you're looking at about at least an hour, but most likely upwards of 2 hours of that blood changing that much of a color.
Huh.
And I said, appreciate that. So I put the video out, and of course, everybody tells me I'm an idiot. I get all these hate mail and the threats and all kinds of different stuff. And but I stuck to it and left the video up there. Of course, YouTube shut me down and I had to put it back up again.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that was it. So I had that. And then fast forward, you know, a year or somewhat later, the police put out the voluntary statements of the officers. And one of those statements, number 11, was Matchko. And Matchko was actually put in charge of the crime scene. After everything had happened, they breached the rooms and blah, blah, blah. And after that, he's in charge of it. And while he's, you know, doing this, he is told to search that room to find any evidence whatsoever for multiple shooters. He needed to find the phones so they could tap them and wire the phones or wiretap the phones and anything else that he could that would help him find multiple shooters. Which, of course, I'm not of the conspiracy camp that believes in multiple shooters, but at the time, no one knew because, I mean, this was still pretty much an active situation and no one really knew. So he's doing his thing and he's got to find it. So now they have to look at the body and they have to, you know, get some ID off the body. So instead of just minorly rolling the body to the side, which is what they're supposed to do, they're not supposed to like full on pick up body and hold it and roll it and all this other stuff. They just, you know, feel around and pad around for the ID. That's what you do. You don't want to disturb the crime scene that much. So he picks up Paddock. Now Paddock had no blood on him, on his face whatsoever. Other than the, you know, just from the little bit of spatter from the shot, and I guess the teeth were cracked from where the my belief is that when the gun recoiled backwards, that he chipped the teeth that way. Hmm. But that's another thing. But so you have this situation where there's really no blood on his face. And so he's holding him up, and then, of course, he notices the blood starts rushing out of Paddock's mouth. And then he lays him back down, and then that's the pattern that shows up on the left side of the body, and that explains the reason why there's two different blood patterns and blood colors from that different time. And there you have it. But the coup de grace of this whole thing, I was vindicated on that, knowing that the body had actually been rolled, was the fact that Matsko actually, during his test, during his statement, he states that he sees Levi Hancock and O'Donnell come back to the crime scene, and he asks them, "What are you doing?" And Levi Hancock says, "I'm taking pictures." Pictures for who? Pictures for their boss, or for his boss. Levi Hancock's boss is the same boss that Matsko had. So why in the world would they both need to be taking pictures? They both didn't receive these orders. Only Matsko had the orders to actually secure the scene and to take pictures and to do whatever he could to get evidence to find multiple shooters. And Levi Hancock shows up and takes pictures. That pretty well nailed it. Pretty much nails it. I wondered if Lombardo wants to change his answer to that question now.
Yeah. Because pretty obvious where some leaks may have come from about that. That info. And you know, that was a long time coming. The vindication on the rollover. You came up with that a long, long time ago, and it was all of not even a month ago that. That the report came out confirming that.
Yeah, it was just just weeks ago, and back when I first reported it, I was the first one. I checked all over the internet. Has anyone talked about this yet? No one had said anything. Oh my god, there's like it. But I don't ever use the word like exclusive or something like that. And I just put it out there. And man, you talk about all the hate. Yeah. I just left and right, and I was like, wow. And you know, when YouTube took my channel down, of course, all the comments went away too. And I was thinking, well, you know, I've got another fresh start, so I'll put it back up. And sure enough, here comes back the comments.
Trevor, you don't know what you're talking about. What are you, a forensic scientist now, and you're this, and you're a ballistics expert, and you're all of these things?
If you want some of those, you may be able to find them on the Internet Wayback Machine.
Just
to find screenshots of comments or something like that.
Yeah, I tried, and it wasn't there. I love the Wayback Machine. That thing's so awesome. And God, I go back and look at my original World of Weapons website when I built in 1996.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, wow, I got blinking and flashing things and the globe spinning. And I'm like, that was I was so proud of myself.
Oh, Flash. I love that Flash animation.
Flash is fun.
And, you know, it's just what surprises me, what gets me, and like I told you, like I said a while ago, like I told you before the show, I just interviewed D.B. Cooper's niece.
That's awesome.
The woman who claims to be D.B. Cooper's niece. And dude, that case just closed. It opened in 1971.
Recently?
Yeah.
In the
last year, they announced that it was finally closed. It was like 2016 or 2017 that they finally went, yep, done.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We aren't looking anymore.
I had no clue. And here we are. We already closed this case.
Yeah, we've already closed this case, and we have zero motive.
Mm-hmm.
All we ever found in DB's case was the accounts of this dude did this. We know it happened. Mm-hmm. And then some random piles of money back in the early 80s that popped up, washed ashore near a wildlife refuge.
Well, in this case, with the motive, it's been all over the map. I mean, there's been so many things that have been brought up, and no one really answers it because Paddock was really quiet, very reserved, kept to himself, didn't really, never yelled or anybody, and just no one really knew much about him. I mean, he didn't have a whole bunch of friends, and
took good care of his girlfriend.
Yep.
Called his mom just to say hi, not to say goodbye like a normal person would do. Hey, might be going on a trip, something like that. You know, there was no like suicide note. There was no, fond farewell. Hey, brother, it's so long. I'm going to be going on a trip. I'll probably never see you again. Yeah, nothing like that. Exactly.
I talked to Eric at length about that. And there wasn't nothing there.
Yeah. He had zero political affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like the dude that went out and opened up fire on the friggin' senatorial baseball game, you know, where it's like, God, I hate Republicans, you know.
Wasn't religious and didn't have really anything. He's pretty much just a neutral guy around. He's like Switzerland of men.
Yeah.
He just in the middle, didn't go either way.
Wasn't even like most of our mass shooters that we have and that we see where they have at some point been on an antipsychotic, been diagnosed, complained of hearing voices or said that they've heard voices, nothing like that. Totally. And the only motive was that he owed a lot of money to casinos. And it's like, he didn't owe them. He paid them the money. Like, he kept going back. He had the money.
They weren't
like coming at, it wasn't like, go do this or they're going to come break your legs, you know,
which is how some people
want to make it sound.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, and I'm even of the camp that says that he was angry at the casinos. And he was. His income had gone down. His net worth had definitely gone down over the last couple of years. And I have verified all this with Eric. I mean, Eric and I have talked a lot. I mean, just, you know,
Eric being his brother.
Eric, his brother. I don't know. That relationship pretty much started from the situation with Rodney Peterson, who. He is a person that claimed that he was with Static and played some blackjack and had an experience with Static. But the problem with, and I started contacting Eric to see if I could try to verify this information. And finally, Eric contacted me back and we started talking. And he says, you know what? He didn't really like come out and say, I like you. I only want to talk to you. It actually just kind of ended up that way, in a roundabout way, where he just said, you know what, he doesn't want to deal with the guy he was dealing with before as far as his media outlet is concerned. He wants to only talk to me. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, well, appreciate that.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I've had this show take a few routes, and I'm so glad to have brought it back to its root and what I really wanted to do with it. Like, since I've done that, I have gotten emails from people after my guests had been on where it's like, I have been electronically harassed by the government. Who do I contact for help? And when that kind of stuff starts happening, like when people like DB's niece tell me off air, like, wow, like, you seem like the only person that I've told this to that does not want to twist this story some way. That just wants to accept it as it is and just wants to hear me tell my story.
Yeah. And that position for you to do that, honestly, is probably the best thing.
It's the most beautiful thing in the world, man.
Absolutely. Just because you have to take it, you have to consider it this way. Whether you believe her or not makes no difference.
No.
The fact of the matter is that she believes it.
Well,
and you have to like work with that.
You've
got to understand
that. You've got to understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, to that person, it's real. You know, I'm an atheist. So you can imagine every day of my life I'm going around and I have to, yes.
And yet still get along on a lot of things. I spent my first year in college studying to be a Catholic priest, far from atheist. Doesn't mean that we can't listen to each other. And much like the people that were angry at you, you were not purporting any kind of conspiracy theory. You were putting no theory out there. You were just pointing out a point of datum. The fact that the body had apparently been rolled over. Has anybody else noticed this?
Right.
I'm not saying they rolled it over to hide information. I'm not saying they did it to plant information. I'm just saying it happened.
And people say that some of us, myself and Mr. Burgundy and a couple others, that really are just putting out what we feel is factual information and what have you, and that can be verified. That to me is the most important thing.
Exactly.
If I present evidence, my goal from the very beginning, the first, I wrote down on a piece of paper five things, if I was doing a mission statement, five things. And one of those was simply this: any evidence that I acquire absolutely must pass every smudge test, smell test, sniff test, scratch test, whatever test they're going to put on it, must pass it, or else I don't report it. Simple as that. And if I do report something that might be a little gray area, I will say it. The,
loud and clear.
This is something I found, and you guys make of it what you will, just like I did with Laura Loomer, and my laser pointed at this left tower, and I thought we had a second shooter. I was even amazed. But, these things, being a reporter and former intelligence and all these different things that roll up into one package that becomes me, and then everybody wonders, well, no person could do all the crap you've done. There's got to be some, you got to be connected somewhere to some agency or whatever. You got to be law enforcement or FBI. And no, it's just, that's not the case. And it was important to me to make certain that any evidence I come up with can be used in court. And yeah. Absolutely. And I don't know how many times this has happened before where someone comes on as basically a YouTube investigator, so to speak, and finds evidence and says, okay, we just got to throw to court. And the rest is history. But I don't know. It's just, there's a lot that we go through as a creator on YouTube and as a independent investigative journalist like myself or Limmer, Mr. Burgundy is just a great guy. We go out there and we put everything on the line, and then here's what happens every now and then. We take a lot of heat for it. A lot of people don't realize what we go through to do this with the trolls and with the conspiracy theorists.
Absolutely.
No one died. And, it's like, nobody died. You're all liars and you're making up this stuff and you're working for the government. And I'm like, well, if I'm working for the government, I need to check because I'm
getting far
a lot of money
paid.
Doing an investigation. And I don't, my videos aren't monetized. I'm not making a dime. I didn't want to.
Where do I put in for my requisitions?
Exactly. Where's that shill check? Where's that come from? And who do I contact?
Yeah, exactly. And there are so many people like yourself, like Ben Swan. I love watching his reporting, and he was a mainstream reporter. He was out on I think it was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And started reporting on stuff, I think it was called Fact Check or something like that, where he just had like a small segment once a week where it was like, hey, here's this hot topic in the news. Let's really break it down. And he would start going into it, like one of them that he did was all about the gas weapons in Syria. And it was like, whoa, check it out. Here's a mainstream reporter back in the day, 5 years ago, saying, nope, sorry, we were giving weapons to the rebels. Like the rebels are now ISIS. We funded that. We started that.
We created them.
And he was on straight up TV putting that stuff out there. And it was like, wow. The freaking cojones, man. You got an amazing producer, one, if he's letting you just do that as a fun project once a week and putting this kind of stuff out there. But it was...
Yeah, you got to wonder if they're watching, if the roosters are hanging around this little hen house and the fox is guarding it,
That's just it. Was like, he had to leave that. He started his own thing for a little while, then had to go underground.
Mm-hmm.
He had to drop off the map before he just recently rebranded and brought things back to life. And some of the reporting that he does is just so amazingly well done.
I absolutely agree. I'm in awe in some of the things that he comes out with, and just being from the, it's kind of like from the intelligence community, you listen to some of these things that people acquire and you realize that there's leaks and that occurs. And then there's people like him that go after any little tidbit or lead that they have, or someone contacts them and they follow it. And then they're not even surprised anymore that they find out, wow, this is actually happening.
Yeah.
Well, so it's no longer conspiracy theory when it's true.
Yeah. Kind of like Michael Weston. We never really did get an answer as to why Michael Weston died. All we know is that he was putting out some crazy report on General Mattis.
Mm-hmm.
And
next thing you know,
his car blows up while it's just driving down the road, and it's some factory malfunction or something.
Yeah. Your ass I'm never doing a story on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
That one scares me. The Bangladesh or in the situation happened, I don't like laughing about any situations, there's a side of it that is somewhat humorous that, if I'm going to investigate anything, it won't be Clinton's or Clinton Foundation or
start,
nothing. But
start playing the 6 degrees of Clinton death. You know, yeah. Like how exactly. How far separated are you from somebody that died by possibly by the hands of the Clintons?
That was, oh man.
Like, I've said it before, even on this show, I have nothing like, mm-hmm. I guess, personally, because I don't personally know them. But like, if yeah. I had the cursory trail of bodies attached to me, guaranteed, I'd probably be in prison, bro.
And you know, when you think back to it, you start thinking about, you know, people ask me, who'd you vote for last year? And I'm like, well, 2 years ago now.
Doesn't really matter.
Who'd you vote for? I said, well, you know, we're turning to politics. When our system of government gets down to the point where when we're choosing the next president and the way we choose it is by picking the lesser of two evils.
Horrible.
Then there's an issue. There's something wrong. Yeah. And of course, you look around the whole world and, you know, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Hillary supporter, you can relate to what I'm about to say. Because every country in the world, when they look at the United States, they're probably crossing their arms and going, is that really the best they got?
Yep.
That's really it.
Yeah. No, there was not a single person up there in the last election that was not embroiled in controversy.
Exactly.
And there's one thing to muckraking. There's another thing when you are straight up embroiled in controversy, when you are mm-hmm. being investigated for pay for play. Mm-hmm. when you have sold resources of the United States to a declared apparent United States enemy,
absolutely.
You know, that kind of stuff.
And you got 33,000 emails missing.
Well, and not to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the map. Right?
Well, there were fraud claims against Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. he and his wife, all that kind of stuff. Like every single one of them, it's like, good Lord, have mercy.
I think Bernie just apologized for whatever involvement he had in the last day or so. I think some inappropriate whatever.
There was some kind of not sexual misconduct, but mm-hmm. an apparent sexual discrimination.
Exactly.
If I'm not mistaken, along those lines. You know, I can't thank you enough for coming on, sharing this information, going over and breaking down some of the issues that we still have, even though we have a closed mm-hmm. case with Stephen Paddock and the Mandalay Bay massacre and the mm-hmm. shooting. There are still so many more questions. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to, much like I saw on social media when this document came out that vindicated you about the body being turned over. I was like, I've got to have you on to talk about that. Because it's so important to know that though the case is closed, information is still being disclosed.
Absolutely.
And the information that's being disclosed still tells a different story than what was wrapped.
Exactly.
And the narrative that we've been sold.
The bigger picture is people have to look for news and everywhere they can find it and then absorb what they feel is right for them. I mean, you know, not everything I say is going to be right for everybody, but I'm trying to be factual as I can.
Well, it's the fact of we need to get back to a study of science. We need to get rid of the dirty term conspiracy theory. I say it on the show all the time. If we're going to get rid of conspiracy theories, there's a lot of DAs out of a job and a lot of people that need to get out of prison.
We used to call those spicy acorns. We wouldn't even use the term in the intelligence community. We would not use that term. We would say spicy acorn, which is an anagram of the word conspiracy. If you switch mm-hmm. letters around, you can come up with spicy acorns. So that sounded better.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it came about as a means by which to disprove something to begin with, mm-hmm. back in the days right after when the first multiple shooter theories came out with JFK, all that kind of stuff. It's just carried on to this day. And I mean, there are people guilty of conspiracy. It's an actual law thing, folks. Look it up. That's all a DA does is spin a narrative to sell you on the conspiracy of somebody to commit a crime. So
and I think part of the issue with conspiracy theories, or for the lack of a better term, we hopefully will coin one day, maybe spicy acorn, who knows?
Well,
the thing is that when people look, they go to YouTube and they're trying to get information because obviously their local news is no longer really carrying information on Las Vegas, and they look for Las Vegas information, and they start finding some of the conspiracy theories that just are a little bit out there. You know, you got like helicopters shooting people, and you got
silent helicopters shooting people, which silent helicopters exist, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but they definitely aren't like hovering over Las Vegas. I'm sorry.
Right. You know, and there's helicopters out there every day. But, you know, I always, everybody knows I have an issue with that particular person that puts that information out. But, you know, there's a whole string of them. And then it got there for a while. It seemed like every 2 weeks there's a brand new theory coming out.
Yeah.
And there's a point where some borderline absurd, but some of them actually have a little bite where there's actually a little bit of truth to them. We have to go, okay, there might be something here.
Well, like I said, I never realized that was Janet Airlines right on the other side of those tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And he definitely has a connection to Lockheed, which is like that's one of the main contractors out there at Area 51, where Janet Airlines exclusively flies to.
And I'll release a video here before long. I was actually almost arrested in front of Janet Airlines at cop when I was taking pictures, and an officer, and this is all on video, the whole thing's on video. this officer rushes up on me, and I'm just really just backing over to Janet. I'm 8 feet away from the entrance, and this cop comes below to me and says, "Were you just taking pictures of the tanks?" I'm like, "Of the fuel tanks?" "Yes." And he goes, "Well, you're not allowed to take pictures of the tanks," and da-da-da-da. I'm like, "I'm a reporter." And I'm like, "Oh, you're a reporter." And, then he goes on, and of course, I'm paraphrasing everything. He says, "Well, reporters are supposed to go to the viewing area." I'm like, "Where's that?"
Yeah.
he points to the airport, and it's 2 miles on the other side of the airport. I'm like, "You want me to take pictures of the tanks from 3 miles away?"
Yeah.
I just laughed. And
let me grab my sport lens.
And I got an 8-inch, you know, Smith & Wesson telescope. I'll bring that out.
And feel free to use it. The term I have coined here on this show is conspiracy hypothesis, because by all scientific means, we have to have a hypothesis to disprove in order to have a theory, folks, which means throw anything out there. That's what a hypothesis is. It's something meant to be disproved. So feel free to disprove my hypothesis.
And then you use various types of reasoning to come up with whatever you're going
to
come up with.
I'm not married to my hypothesis. It's just a hypothesis.
And that's the scientific approach. That's the way to view it. And that's a great out, too. It's like anybody says anything, "Hey, I'm not married to it.
I'm just hypothesizing. I'm not saying.
We're just putting this out there."
Yeah. I mean, there's still the theory of relativity, because we haven't completely proved it yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Still many a part missing. So.
Yep, and gravity is not, absolute. Gravity exists.
Yeah, it's not absolute. Is it just observed?
We see the effects, but we can't really see it.
Exactly. And I would love to have you back on, of course, to cover updates as they come along. I'd love to have you back on as an intelligence consultant, just to kind of break things down as they happen in the world around us, man. Because, if you haven't been trained to analyze patterns in the news, if you haven't been trained to see these kind of patterns, it's so easy. It's so easy to get just roped into a dialogue. Well, into not having a dialogue, really.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. It's so entrenched. Anybody that comes out of our field is stuck on patterns. I mean, everything is a pattern. You look for that, and you try to see where it came from, where it's going, blah, blah, blah. And you try to predict, and you get predictive analysis and all this different stuff. And it gets tricky, but you know, after a while, you just have to take a lot of stuff with a grain of salt and go, "Well, you know what? We're just going to see where this goes and let it go on its own, and I'm not going to predict anything," because some of this gets pretty bizarre.
And it gets bizarre really quick. So
this whole case has been bizarre since the beginning.
That's just it. It's been a riddle wrapped in an enigma as to why it happened, how it happened. And the aftermath, the sheer utter aftermath of the event. We still have no answers for what is the largest mass shooting on U.S. soil ever.
Yeah, that's true.
Not
that's
a single answer.
There's still a lot of questions. And, you know, with the FBI report supposed to be out, probably I'm gonna go ahead and mention this on your show.
Go ahead.
I've heard from my sources that probably within 10 days.
Oh, wow.
Is what we're looking at. So hopefully that will hold true.
Yeah. Well, let's hope and pray for that. At least we'll have some kind of answer, whether it's, I mean, whether it's we still don't know, or we at least know more details now. So
yeah, my understanding from the BAU is that's going to be the largest portion of the report, and then we'll have some analysis of some other things, and everybody's asking for ballistics and some of the more physical analysis of some of the things that were taken to Quantico and tested. But
sure,
the BAU report, that's going to be a very large portion of it, from what my understanding. But it's probably still not going to have the answer, and it's going to be one of the very first or very few crimes in history, especially on the order of this magnitude. Nothing is on this magnitude other than, say, 9/11 or something like that, that does not have a motive, And
yeah.
So I'm going to be sitting there wondering what they're going to come up with. And, I know Eric and I, we sat around at length, and I had an interview with him that I'll be releasing here before long. And, we discussed a little bit of that, and, he knows his brother better than anyone, and I really wanted to get that information from him so I could get into that mindset and find out, for myself, what do I think he did, and we're pretty much on the same page as far as him and I, and you'll find out what that is in short order.
Absolutely.
And also in the movie. And
once that interview comes out, I'd love to listen to it and have you on just to kind of break that down.
I'm going to shoot out an advanced copy to several different places, and I'll put you on that list. And
most definitely. Thank you.
You got it. No problem.
While we still have you, real quick, let everybody know where they can go online to find the work of 5x5 News and the work of Mike Turber.
There you go. As far as the 5x5 News is concerned, if you are looking for the what we've discussed today, as far as the video format and what have you, if you head over to YouTube and search for 5x5 News, that's where I put most of the information there. And if you have any questions, you can ask the comments or just email me. If you have a specific question, MikeTurber@gmail.com. It's real simple to get to me. And if you need help in a situation that you have, where because I help in pedophile cases, I help in murders and rapes, and you name it, I'm all over the map as far as helping people that can't seem to find answers from their local sources for whatever reason, whether it be the police or whether it be FBI or whoever. I will try to get you those answers as best I can.
Fantastic. I'm glad to have somebody to be able to recommend, because I've had a few emails like that. It's like, man, my network is growing every day, and I've got some wild connections out there. But man, to have one of those connections that I can send people to, you can't.
Sure.
So while you're online checking out the great work of Mike Turber and 5x5 News, make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. We've got a great new store, dudesandbeer.com/store. We'll get you there. All of the books from our guests, like Dr. John Hall, Susan Mariani, even Monica Mehta, books from John Campbell Society, all that kind of stuff, or Joseph Campbell Society, rather, all that kind of stuff. All right there, some great paranormal gear, everything else. Go check that out, dudesandbeer.com/store. While you're there, you can also check out the great deals at diamondcbd.com. All of their stuff is 100% natural, no additives, anything like that. All approved, all scientifically tested, great stuff. Whenever you go to your cart, use the code DUDES420 to get 30% off your price. Once again, Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, everybody, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network,
Visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.